Welcome to Dev317, Windows Runtime Deep Dive. Thanks for surviving to the end of the day. I know the food has certainly helped. Enjoy it, because I'm starving. For those of you guys who don't know me, my name's Brendan Forster, and I'm a senior developer at Redify. When I'm not doing that, I'm usually hacking on a bunch of open source projects. Have you guys heard about Code52 at the start of the year? That was my little, well, I was one of the guys who started that, and I really want to get back to it, and I lament the fact that I'm too busy at the moment. If you guys want to reach me on Twitter, I'm Shifty. If you guys are on Twitter at all, use those hashtags to give me feedback about this talk. This is new stuff. You know, Windows 8 isn't quite out the door to consumers, and I'm trying to get my head around the actual internals, and I'd love for you guys to see if this stuff helps. So three things I want to touch on today. What, how, and a little bit of why, but mostly what this Windows runtime thing is, how you guys can use it, and actually what's happening underneath. This is only a 300 course, so I'm not going to go deep, 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 but hopefully you guys will get enough out of it, given how your brains likely are after a long day at TechEd. So the people who should be interested in this talk are those guys who work with different languages. So if you're doing, you know, C++, C#, you know, you're a web programmer sort of thing, Windows 8 has all these options available. So I'm going to show you guys more about that. If you want performant code sort of thing, this stuff is very close to the metal. And of course, those people who just love internals. And don't worry, there is no test. Ultimately, this stuff is more a curiosity thing, you know, kind of understand what's going on. You guys can still go away today and build apps without having to understand anything. But hopefully you guys pay attention. So back in September, we had the Build conference, and they introduced this lovely diagram. You know, we've got the existing apps on the right, we've got the new stuff on the left, you know, the same OS underneath. I'm not going to worry about that existing stuff. I'm going to focus just on the new. And in fact, I'm going to take it to the extreme and not worry about any UI, because in particular, you know, the Windows runtime stuff is, you know, this new core that we're building apps on top of, and I want to talk about the language side as well. Let me see if I've got this right. Windows Runtime is a cross-platform application architecture for use on the Windows 8 operating system. And that's the driest definition that I could find. To flip it around, what I wanted to talk about was the possibilities that you could use with this platform. You know, picking the language that you want for your code, picking the UI stack that you want, and still having access to the platform underneath, the same access to the platform underneath. So I'll run you through what this stuff is and leave you guys with a question. So switching. So this first solution consists of a JavaScript project and a C# project. They're both Windows 8 apps. I'm going to go through the task of pulling a file from local storage. As soon as I get my Speedy Beach Ball back. That's not it at all. So this is the C# code to find my local folder storage and pull a file out. The catch here is that we have this asynchronous method, and rather than it returning a storage folder, actually as an async action operation, which is sort of like, I will give you this file at some point in the future, and actually gives you a hint underneath as to the best way to use this. If you were in Bill Tulloch's talk earlier today, you would have heard about async and await. And that gives me the storage file out. Very simple syntax for making these complex async code easy to read and easy to write, first off. What if I was to do this in JavaScript land? So there's the equivalent code in JavaScript. Getting file async. But rather than doing this trick here of F equals that, I'm actually going to turn this around and use what's called the Promises API. So then, has a number of overloads where I can pass in functions for success and error handlers. Very different to what the C-sharp guys are expecting to deal with. If I write some code like that. So there's my callback. So we've got these two languages that behave very differently in terms of consuming the API, the same API. First off, I'm going to go into two questions. Where is this API coming from? And why are these consumers so different? How are they actually working? So part of the Windows runtime is what's called Windows metadata. It's an API that describes the code underneath. If you've seen .NET and you've dealt with DLLs, it's a similar concept. Actually, so similar that they use the same format for describing it. So the Windows runtime ships with a Windows metadata file, literally just one file. So I can just skip across now and show you guys that. So I'm going to open up a disassembler called .peek. If you've used IL-DASM, IL-SPY, there's one also by Telerik, Reflector sort of thing. Up the top here, just kill that one off. See that path? So, like the Microsoft SDKs, they've actually shipped one with Windows 8. Sits in Windows Kit 8.0. Inside there, there's just one metadata file called Windows MD, and actually has all the namespaces that ship with the OS. So if I was to go through and find my storage file API, I'm going to go in and find storage folder, disassemble that. Get file async. Notice how there's actual no code in here. We've just got a hint with the attribute to say the method implementation is elsewhere. The metadata file, in my case with the Windows WinMD file, there is no logic. The actual stuff is in another location. If I was to build my own libraries, which I'll get into later, we can actually embed the code and the logic to do this in the Windows metadata files. So we've got a way to pull out the actual API data in a consistent fashion using WinMD. What about the other side? So this introduces the concept of language projections. The libraries ship their WinMD files for people to consume. The projections themselves actually go beyond the basics of parsing the metadata and can tailor the APIs to suit their own languages. Like before, when we saw the C-sharp stuff, they were allowed to do awaitable behaviors. JavaScript stuff is also done, but in a different way. The awesome thing about language projections is that they can occur at compile time or at runtime, because JavaScript is, a purely interpreted language. C++ and C-sharp, they're actually projected at compile time. So here's a better diagram of the Windows runtime bits and pieces. We've got the core at the bottom, we've got the core APIs in the metadata space, there's the language support up the top. And the language projection is just this thin veneer between your app and the underlying core. Rather than baking all this language projection stuff into the Windows core, they've made it up to the languages themselves to implement this behavior. Let's go a little bit deeper. A Windows runtime object, how does that actually behave when it goes back up to my app? So I'm going to go with this example of just an object that behaves like an array. Those two interfaces at the top, iUnknown is a com one, iInspectable is what Windows runtime looks at to determine the behavior. So at runtime, I actually say my array implements these interfaces. These are actually, Windows runtime cores. The language that sits on top doesn't actually see this. Your consuming app doesn't care what they've got. The fun stuff is when you look at it in terms of your different apps, you've got an interface for iEnumerable if you're doing C#, the standard temporal libraries projections for C++, and JavaScript, JavaScript does whatever JavaScript does. The key thing here is that, your applications don't care about the underlying core. They behave, like a JavaScript app would. This sounds hard to do. I just say com and, there's all these interfaces around, Nah, it's not hard. I'll show you guys how easy it is to knock up a Windows runtime component. So, just some context while this is starting up. Right after the build bits came out, I literally did a brute force port of something to win Doe's runtime. And I did not have fun at all. And I wrote this rant of a blog post to say, oh, I can't do this, oh, I can't do that, the whole world is ending sort of thing. I put it away and came back a few months later and kind of went, oh, that makes more sense. So I'll run you guys through the mistakes that I made, and hopefully you guys, when you're looking at this stuff, get a better picture of it rather than me dealing with drinking from the fire hose. So in essence, I've got my solution open, I do add, new project. Class library is how, .NET applications would have these isolated components of logic, but I've also got this guy here, Windows Runtime Component. Make a note of that. We'll come back to it. So inside here, just going to add a new project. It's got an empty class. I'm going to do Control-Shift-B. And it builds. The important thing to note, I've just cranked up the MS build output to verbose. There's a step here called WinMD-EXP. So this runs after you've compiled your project together, and it actually transforms your library into a Windows metadata file. It actually also does a set of rules on top of the stuff that the C# compiler uses. So if I was to, for example, take away the sealed attribute, WinRType type should be sealed. So there's a very constrained type system with Windows runtime. If you think about the languages of like JavaScript, they don't have support for generics. Inheritance is very different between JavaScript and C++ and C#. So they've got this very tight set of rules that you've got to follow if you want to expose these things as public types in Windows runtime. What sort of things don't work? Well, let me tell you. Abstract classes. If you've got code that you define the base behavior in, don't expose it. If you've got protected classes in your libraries, don't expose it. The set that I've used in the past that's worked for me is those last three options. Internal, unless I need to expose it, in which case it then becomes public and sealed. Generics, if you love using generics with your C# code, you're going to be very sad. Basically, you can't do it. Again, that's because these guys are public. If you want to use your generics and work around it, you can just set them to internal. Nested types? No. Plain and simple. Again, internalize them. If they're public, they're going to follow these rigorous set of rules. And again, public fields, it's just not on. So I bet you guys are very depressed. Let me try and offset your concerns with something that I did earlier. So there's a sample project on Google Code for doing OAuth in C#. I took the time to port it across to Windows runtime, and it was actually reasonably straightforward once you kind of focus on the right things. Demo gods. So just for reference, I'll bring up the code in Google. So they just ship a single class with all the things that you need to kind of do in one spot. With the OAuth, you can probably already see a few things that it's not going to like. the WinRT version. Key things to note, Windows Dot API is now for cryptography. Streams are there as well for some stuff that I'll explain in a second. All those properties that were protected in this previous code are now internal. And again, there's my public sealed class at the top. So if you come further down here, there's some new interfaces in the Windows runtime for specifically, instead of passing around bytes, you pass around an I buffer. Cryptographic key, you know, they've basically fixed up all the stuff that they, you know, this is like .NET 1 APIs that they've now finally updated. So there's new things in the APIs, there's some breaking changes, but ultimately the code itself was reasonably easy to compile. And I've got a link to this repository in the notes, so you guys can pore over what I actually did to update this in a little bit more detail. But of course, you know, that was kind of like, hello world, I changed one class, you know, and what do I actually get out of it? If you're still feeling uncomfortable about this, let me go back to my example from before. You can just quickly switch this guy back to being a plain old class library. So in there, you know, rather than doing Windows Runtime Component, I can just switch back to be a class library, and everything will be, you know, I don't have to care about those rigid type systems. The problem with that is that I can't then consume this guy in C++ or JavaScript, basically because I'm using, for example, generics. You know, it's only specific to C# that I can consume that. But ultimately, if you are hardcore enough, go for the Windows runtime stuff. So Cartoonify is an application that Nick Hodge started working on. I cleaned it up for the purposes of this TechEd talk, and it's a combination of C++ and JavaScript. What Cartoonify does is it accepts an image in, processes it, and gives it back. Rather than doing that in, you know, JavaScript, you know, manipulating bytes sort of thing, we actually, you know, use C++ code because, you know, that stuff is a whole lot easier to use for the crunching. Let's run through it. So I'm not a UI guy, I'll say that straight up. Does anyone actually like those little comments? I thought they were amazing that I got them past the content guys. Cool. So I've got my JavaScript application and I've got the C# library for doing imaging in the bottom part. All I did, or all actually Nick did this bit, I have this C++ class file for doing representing the component. So inside there, you know, there's this transform image async code. Takes in a file, returns a file. It's also using the async helpers for reporting progress. So this one here is, like before, done in a WinRT component. We then reference it in the other project, and we can start running this code. So my project reference, there's the imaging library. If I jump into the JS files, image processing, there's that code. So I new up a WinRT component. I throw some code at it. You know, there's my callbacks like before for error, success, and updating progress. You know, reasonably easy code, looks like JavaScript, behaves like C++. What does it look like? I'll miss you, C++. So I'll let that build and run. Again, this code will be available after the talk for those who want to dig more into it. So kicking into my simulator. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. So import a file. That's the one I want. Cartoonify. So there's that progress coming through as it runs and processes the image. Again, C++ coming back into the JavaScript app. And as that gets up to 100%, we'll see the end result. You guys know that site, don't you? All right. So there's the end result. You know, using JavaScript for the UI because it was easier, using C++ for the image processing because that was what C++ was doing well. If I go and switch to a different image, for example, I'll do that. You get the picture. So probably the other little bits. So referencing the platform was necessary for doing that create async stuff. Aside from that, it's all reasonably straightforward if you are familiar with the C++ bits. There's also an interesting header in here that I'll leave till later. Beautiful. So I also learned as a result of doing this talk that cartoonify is actually a more common word. I thought Nick just made it up. So we've seen this app, you know, it's doing the various bits and pieces. Let's actually change gear and see what's going on underneath. So there's this diagram from before. I actually left out two pieces from that. We've got the web host and we've got the runtime broker. For example, if you've got a web app, that'll actually run inside the IE10 rendering engine inside this app, inside this executable called WWA host. Runtime broker is another interesting part. If your app requires permissions to the OS or user information, the runtime broker is actually responsible for checking that. And of course, your app runs in a sandbox. You know, I'm sure that everyone who has done Win32 stuff in the past was probably a bit annoyed about that, but ultimately that's the model that they're going towards now for these apps that run on the store. Yes? So I'll actually switch to Procmon after, but to give you an idea, you know, WWA host is that process that's running my HTML Windows 8 app. I can see in here that it's actually running this app in a dedicated way because it actually passes in the application that it runs. So this is, again, the COM infrastructure. We don't have to worry about this stuff. It's just nice to know that it's there. Even if you were to do a C# application there, it actually runs as a specific EXE. But if you look at the details on that, it's still the same setup. And I double-check this. Oops, sorry, that's a random name. Did I duplicate something? I actually check this by disassembling that code that's there as the app starts. If you're WPF or WinForms guy, you'll know that there's a program main entry point to your app. I checked it in the Windows runtime, and that's all it's got. You know, a callback to say something's happened doesn't actually look like it's actually activating any types, which begs the question, where is it determining the app starts? The manifest. If you guys have been building Windows 8 apps, you'll have a UI there for managing the manifest details, you know, images, the entry points, all those details. Ultimately, that's an XML file. And so inside my declaration there, when I do a file new project, it says, hey, you're actually going to run this app. You're going to create this app type inside this executable. And even with a web app, it's the same sort of thing. So the app is in a sandbox. The manifest knows what thing to use when it starts up. But what about those permissions? You know, the runtime broker kicks in. How does it know what to do? That itself, you know, you've clicked on... Oh, I should do that with a real demo. I thought I'd block this. 2 seconds. Cool. I thought I'd be able to trick this guy into triggering for permissions again by revoking it, but it seems happy. So imagine you just saw that. So the application goes off and asks for your geolocation. where you are based on Wi-Fi or GPS based on the hardware. The user has to explicitly opt in for this. The runtime broker knows how to deal with that. Again, by coming back to the manifest. So by default, when you do a new project, internet client is enabled so you can pull down data. So that's not actually something that's a given, it's just a permission. And in there, I've got my location capability as well. To recap, I'm not going to recap. I'm going to show you guys how you can do what I just did in there. So I'm going to fire up Procmon. Kill off these apps. So start it running. What filters have we got on? Let's clear those. So there's stuff going on in my file system. Who's actually used Procmon before? Process monitor. Good fair share of hands. Excellent. Excellent. So I'm just going to open up a couple of apps. Come back to Procmon, go and show the process tree. So there's my runtime broker processor. There's the WWA host, which is running app.wma. Cool, there's the Messenger app. And there's my C# app. So I'm going to just include those. So inside there, we get an idea of what the application actually does on startup. Pulling in assemblies, querying for registry, those things that typical apps usually do. A fun little thing that I found during my testing is that WWA host actually pulls in the Trident DLLs, which are mshtml.dll. Let me find that now. See if I can remember my syntax. Beautiful. So WWA host loads up the MSHTML assembly, and that's part of the application startup. This stuff isn't magic. It's just Windows apps underneath. I'm going to do more digging when I get some spare time, but I think there's some nuggets in here for those people who, again, like to kind of dig into what's going on underneath. Another interesting point here. When I run this app using Visual Studio, it actually installs into the machine that it's running on. Even though I'm in the simulator, if I switch back to the start menu, not that start menu, that's the icon for my app. The deployment that it does there is the same process that it does for when you download things from the store. And if you have problems with the actual deploy step, there's an easy thing to find in the event viewer. No, not that event viewer. So you guys all know about Event Viewer, right? Good. What was that? So there's two particular folders that you're going to be interested in with the deployments of apps. Apex deployment, Apex deployment server. There was a lovely issue that I helped debug during the AppFest where the guy was trying to deploy and he was getting this random error code. What we did was come into the logs. Nope. All beautiful deployments. So sometimes, you know, something will go wrong with the deployment. I had a scenario where my simulator refused to deploy the app. It actually dumped out a message here in the event viewer. I'll do my filtering like a good little tester. Beautiful. So inside there, the deploy failed. It gives me an error code back. If it's actually repeatable, you know, I could go to the support website, you know, for Microsoft and say, what's this actually mean? Help me out, guys. Again, this is just Windows underneath. Nothing fancy, nothing special. And for my last little trick, regedit. Applications that are installed on your machine will have entries in the registry. So this is how the operating system goes through and finds out what's installed on your machine and what it needs to start up. I'll leave that because that's definitely going into the 400 territory, but if you want to have a look, you know, that's where my application has been installed. So when an application gets installed, the registry is updated so that it can find where these things are. Do I go further? I think I will. So you might look at that and say, program files, Windows apps. Why can't I find that? It's there, but it's actually in a visible folder. So even though I try and elevate permissions, it doesn't let me through. The way around that da, 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 da. Don't try this at home, kids. I'm now the owner. It's a security measure that's been there for all the beta and you know, developer preview releases. Is it going to let me? Is it going to let me? But ultimately, so the assets as part of your app are just there in C drive program files. As you can see, there's different versions for the news apps as they've been updated. And if I drill into, for example, Microsoft.bing, manifest, assets like that. And this leads on to a whole other discussion around how your packages are secured, you know, obfuscation, encryption, that sort of stuff. Yes, I feel now bad for telling you guys all about this. Yeah. Okay.
How do you clean it up? Like, the name is there, but you want to clean it.
So the question was, how many versions are kept there, and how do you clean it up? So as a user, I can come back to the dashboard, pick out an app. Down the bottom there, I get the uninstall option. That'd be the way that I clean it up. You know, what those updates are actually doing in there, it might be a way to kind of roll back. Ultimately, there's more questions that I need to find out for myself about that. Yeah. Any other questions? You're all quiet. I feel bad. Okay. So a bit of a pep rally. There is choice. You know, you guys don't have to stick to the bits that you do. As Patrick, who spoke earlier today, spoke about, he was a WPF guy. He switched to doing JavaScript and HTML. He loves it, and he's no longer going back to C#. And we have these options available to us for mixing together, you know, the code and components that make up an app. They're all first-class citizens in terms of access to the underlying APIs. what flavour suits you. So I'm around for the rest of the week. I've got a scheduled appointment in the speaker room at 11 a.m. You can find me on Twitter. I'll generally be hanging around the community lounge area, hopefully hacking on stuff. Resources. The build videos from last year are still up. Dev.windows.com has so much available in terms of sample code and everything. I'm going to put up a link to other resources for you guys to read on a GitHub repo, and the source for Cartoonify will go up later. I feel bad for finishing early, but I bet you guys are stuffed, so I don't feel that bad. Question? Yep. It only runs on Windows 8. That's okay. So, like all good things, I'll go back to the Wikipedia definition. Any minute now? Whoa, I've got a white screen here. Okay. Wow. Okay, that was a good way to end it. Oh, not yet, not yet. Come on. Rightio. Hope you guys had fun. Oh, come on, I was there. Okay, now my graphics drive is definitely stuffed, so I'm going to leave it there with just that one demo file. Cool. I'm going to hang around for a little bit. I know you guys probably want to jet and kind of decompress. Yeah, hope you guys had some fun. Damn timings.